From the Alps to Ocean Trail in New Zealand, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, we think we found the biggest waste of money in cycling. The question is, do you agree?
We also have one final victory for the Max Missile, a new affordable set of carbon wheels, an app to demonstrate 15-minute cities that might not be a socialist plot, and a hit and run with a difference.
Hit and not run?
That's it, yes. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Mark Cavendish has officially retired from pro cycling.
Yeah, after 18 years as a professional and 165 wins, including a World Road Race title and an incredible record-breaking tally of 35 stage wins at the Tour de France, it seemed appropriate that he won his final race as well, the Singapore Criterium.
More on Cavendish later. We also learned that a gentleman in the US has been charged $1,800 for an ambulance ride after being involved in a crash.
Yeah, nothing surprising about the cost.
No.
The difference with this incident is that it was the ambulance that knocked him off his bike in the first place and then took him to hospital and charged him.
Which does seem a little unfair,
yeah.
Really, doesn't it? Again, more info on that later in the show.
Yes, right, on to our coffee machine chat.
Well,
now, okay. It actually involved too many people this time,
yeah,
to be at the coffee machine. It was just a general kind of chin wag in the office. So we were chatting to various colleagues about what the biggest waste of money has been for all of us, respectively, over all of the years that we've been cycling.
Indeed. And we do appreciate, by the way, that we're in the incredibly fortunate position of not having had to pay for everything we've been riding for the last 20 years or so. But while you might not think it, we have also still had to buy some stuff.
Yeah, had to buy and then also chosen to buy as well. Like a commuter bike, okay? So for me, one of the biggest wastes of money ever. In fact, the biggest single chunk of money that I've wasted was buying a bike that I didn't really love, okay? I felt that I should have that type of bike. Because it was when I retired from racing and first got a proper job, basically.
A proper job working here?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a proper job, I would argue.
Don't you start as well, mate? My mum keeps saying
that. Oh,
really? Yeah, right, anyway. When I retired from racing and got a different job, yeah, I suddenly wasn't training 20 hours a week, right? But I was commuting for 7.5, 8 hours a week instead. And so I thought I'd better buy a proper commuter bike with mudguards.
You've talked about this before, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
This is where your hatred of mudguards presumably comes from.
It is, yeah. I absolutely hated that bike. Every time I saw it, I hated it and resented the fact that I'd spent money on it. And then every time I rode it, I hated it even more. Technically, it was a good bike. I've seen many people raving about bikes just like that. But for me, it was a huge waste of money and I sold it soon after. So the moral of the story for me was that only buy bikes that you love, right? Not because someone else says they're good. That would be a big mistake. Or because you think it's practical and you should have a bike like that. I think to get the value out of it, not only do you have to love it, I think you also have to love the look of it.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
As well, yeah.
Shall I tell the viewers my experiences?
Go on then, yeah.
Might not come to a surprise to many of you that I'm so careful with my money, I can't really remember a bad cycling purchase or waste to speak of. And I did rack my brains.
Well, when Dan says careful, if you translate that, he means tight.
I don't mean tight. I mean rational, considered, I guess, and well informed.
Well, yeah, all of those three, and also tight, I think.
There was one point, actually, I've just thought. I bought an altitude tent.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, that does sound like a huge waste of money.
I wouldn't say it was, actually. I mean, the tent was great.
Right.
But I bought it on eBay when I was staying in the United States of America over the winter months. And then I found that when I came back home here in Europe...
How did you get it home?
I probably did have to pay excess baggage, actually, on the way back, but it was a bargain. The exchange rates were great at the time.
Right, okay, yeah.
Anyway, when I came back to Europe, I found that it didn't work as I needed it to because of the different electricity supply things here. I don't know what they're called. I had to buy some sort of huge transformer.
That is annoying,
for
isn't it?
Yeah. Although that wasn't so bad. It meant it still works and I could still use it.
Okay.
But eventually I had to sell it for what I paid for it because when I met Lorraine, my now wife, for some reason, she just didn't want to sleep in an altitude tent.
That is weird.
I don't know why.
Yeah. But so technically, your biggest waste of money, you actually didn't waste any money because you bought it somewhere cheap, bought something cheap to make it work, yeah. And then sold it for what you paid for it.
Exactly, yes. I mean, I did tell you that I haven't wasted any money. I was interested to see, though, what people around the office said, though, because yeah. Lots of other people have wasted money, seemingly. Yeah. Connor was lamenting cost-saving purchases that then broke very quickly. So overshoes, I think, was his example.
Yeah, totally this. There was nothing more annoying, I think, than trying to save money only then to incur more costs. Now, it might be buying a cheap product only for it to wear out quickly. I mean, overshoes, actually, you can buy blooming expensive overshoes and they
really
still wear out in one wide. Yeah. Cheap brake pads, that's another one. Seems really good in the first instance. You're like, oh, brilliant. These are like a quarter of the price of these ones. And then they don't work very well or they wear out really quickly. Or... this is another one that I've done a lot of. Why? It's just me saying stuff, mistakes I've made. Anyway, you buy something trying to save money and then have to spend more money to get it to work. A bit like your altitude tent, I suppose. But so often it can happen when you're trying to replace or upgrade your bike. And then you find that stuff doesn't want to work with other stuff like bottom brackets and cranks or chains or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, buying stuff online is a big reason for that sort of thing, isn't it? Sometimes you get some decent advice, sometimes you can work it out for yourself. Other times you buy something and either send it back or forget to send it back and then you're just stuck with it.
Yeah. It's a bit like you with cycling kit.
I might go into it.
Well, yeah, so Isaac, what is it? You bought cycling kit that was on sale even though it wasn't the right size.
Well, I thought it might fit.
Yeah, okay.
Another one that cropped up actually was top-end stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Be that bikes, components, wheels, etc. Basically, you won't get the benefit from it over the more affordable stuff. So therefore, it's a waste of money.
Yeah. This was James from GTN, wasn't it? Saying that no
not
point buying top-end
stuff. Opinionated, James.
No, he really became very animated about this, didn't he? And I can totally see the logic in this, right? Like, so you can't justify buying an expensive bike for performance reasons. So there's that old phrase, isn't there? Like, if you need Durace, someone will give it to you for free, right?
Mm.
You know the one? It's basically like, if Tadej Pogacar needs a bike for performance reasons, but he clearly doesn't have to pay for it anymore.
Yeah. I think he could afford it at this point with his new contract.
I think he could, yeah. But I don't think it necessarily means it's a waste.
Well, it very much depends on how much money you have in the first place, surely.
Yeah.
A bit like flying first class is a waste of money and the world's resources.
And the world's resources, yeah.
We'll gloss over that.
We will. For me, actually, it would be a criminal waste of money, flying first class.
Right.
Because I don't have that kind of money to burn. But if you are a gazillionaire, then I suppose you've got money to waste, right?
Yeah, I'd have to be a gazillionaire to buy first class tickets.
I don't think you'd ever buy first class tickets.
I don't know if I would. I was once upgraded by an airline pilot who was a fan of GCN, and it was a nighttime flight. So it was fantastic. I stayed awake for an hour, had a couple of glasses of champagne, and I slept for the rest of the flight. And I was like, I would never pay that much money to sleep.
No, but I bet it was nice though, wasn't it?
It was lovely, yeah, because I didn't pay for it. But I would never pay... You're right, I would never pay for it. Anyway,
even if you're a gazillionaire.
Oh, maybe, yeah. But it would have to be such small change. Like the equivalent of me at the moment finding a 20 pence pee in my back pocket.
You'd pay 20p for a first-class flight, is basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
With my current earnings.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Right, one thing that I've been giving a lot of thought to recently are new tech developments on new bikes that cost us... consumers more money but for minimal gain. Okay, now I think because we've been talking about this in the GCN show a little bit and many of you have raised some really really good points about the direction that cycling's heading in and about how like the current business model of, you know, only top-end bikes are selling, therefore we put more money into more topper-ender bikes and actually forgetting about everyone else. So for example, an aero bike, one piece bar and stem, makes total sense, right? Because it is measurably faster. However, on a lot of other bikes, whilst it looks very cool, it is also a lot of extra expense for no benefit
at
all.
Again, though, I think it just comes down to how big your budget is in the first place.
Well, it does, but then it also So here's my thing. It filters down to lower price points, doesn't it? So it's what everyone wants because it looks so cool. Mm. But then, I mean, I don't want it to seem like I've got a bee in my bonnet about one-piece bar and stems here. I don't, but I do look at them sometimes and I wonder how they've become as ubiquitous as they are when they've got, you know, they've got no ability. Well, so many of them have got no ability to be adjusted, have they? Like, obviously one or two have got, like, just one has got adjustable width, hasn't it? But otherwise, I just feel like maybe that's like an aftermarket purchase. Once you've dialed in your fit rather than you get a bike and then you're stuck with it,
right?
Can
I just say something?
Go on.
I've just done an assessment. I think you do have a bee in your bonnet, my conclusion.
No, I really don't. I really don't. But I was just thinking about it the other day. It's like, it wasn't a coffee machine chat. It was me at home alone.
Oh, nice.
The, one of those kind of like moments. Yeah. No, not, anyway, let's not go there. Yeah. Anyway, personally, right, I have always struggled with the idea of upgrading group sets.
Right.
I've changed the subject a little bit now. It might be, it might be trying to customise like your Durace or your SRAM Red group set with like super light extra bits, for example. I remember a racer, very good bike racer, who wanted to use a lightweight titanium chain of the Olympics to save him like 50 grams.
That sounds risky.
It does, yeah. So we're going back a few Olympic cycles here. So he snapped one chain on a practice lap.
Yeah.
They still used the backup chain in the race.
And?
And it snapped.
Oh, my
God. And he didn't finish. So, like, what a total waste. Like, you know,
ugh,
I mean, that is a waste of money, right?
4 years.
Yeah, and how, like, how on earth can you improve on a Durace or a SRAM Red chain? I don't know. Yeah.
Question for you then. Where do you stand on expensive trinkets?
Trinkets,
yeah. Let's take, for example, Alex Payton's rear derailleur.
Oh, that is an example, isn't it?
Ceramic speed jockey wheel he's got on that, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've got the money, then you might as well, right? Like, I think they spin really nicely.
Okay.
And ceramic-y drivetrains, as Ollie tells me now, are like, you know, de rigueur.
He's also got an anodized rear derailleur hanger, I think, isn't he?
He does, yeah. I mean, it technically might improve shifting performance.
What, over the stock Durace one?
Probably not. Might be lighter.
Okay.
Possibly a little bit.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a waste because Alex clearly loves it.
He really does love it, yeah.
It is hard to justify for any reason other than it makes him like his bike even more because he's wired that way, really.
Because he's wired that. And I think that's what a lot of this comes down to, right, doesn't it? Yes, there are things that you waste money on, which I think, again, from our office conversation, invariably stems from trying to cut corners, right? But then also, you've got to say, because cycling, well, for most of us, is a hobby, it's a passion, right? Actually buying something for a reason other than its function, I mean, that's okay, right? Mm. As long as you're not, you know, I don't know, sacrificing a hot meal or a pair of shoes or something, like, that's okay, right?
I guess in conclusion then, one rider's waste of money is another's pride and joy.
Well, there you go. Alex Payton's rear derailleur hanger being the case in point. I mean, what do you lot think out there, right? Firstly, what is the biggest waste of money that you have ever wasted?
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
If it doesn't, they'll get the gist.
Yeah, but then also, I mean, yeah, is it cutting corners and trying to save money, or is it just big ticket items that you kind of don't really need?
Mm.
Be very interested to hear your thoughts, actually, on this one.
Yeah.
Get involved in the comment section.
Basically, have you got a bee in your bonnet about anything like Psy?
Or
give us some long, sprawling comments just down below.
Have you ever bought a second-hand altitude tent?
In a foreign country, which means you need a transformer when you get home. Yeah, let us know in the comments below.
It was a brilliant conversation. Literally, Dan, like, hang on a minute. I'm going to go back a bit.
Yeah, I did think for quite a long time.
You went back as far as 1997 and concluded that, no.
I went further back than that. I went back to my first bike, the Marion Muirwoods.
Really?
My first proper bike.
Well, that's not a waste of money, is it? Think of the career path it sent you down.
Quid. You know, the grey one with the blue forks and the blue...
I do remember,
It was great. Yeah.
Money well spent, that, mate.
It was. Yeah. I mean, it's led to this.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with the news that Sir Mark Cavendish has ridden his final race as a professional rider.
There was a bit of will he, won't they? Won't he? Wasn't there a couple of weeks ago? Because he was asked at the Tour de France route presentation whether he was retiring, and he wouldn't confirm either way.
Little trickster.
But last week, ahead of the Singapore Criterium, he took to Instagram to announce his retirement from the sport.
Yeah. I mean, it seems a little bit ridiculous to try and summarise his achievements in the sport in one section of the GCN show. If you would like more details, you could actually check out the video that Dan did here when Cav won his 35th tour stage in the summer.
Yeah, fairly deep dive, didn't he? So we'll link to that in the description just down below.
Yeah. Now, a very brief summary, though, for you. 165 career wins, 35 Tour de France stages, 2 green jerseys. How many stages of the Giro?
Almost 17, I think.
17 stages at the Giro, 3 at the Vuelta. Didn't fancy the Vuelta much, did he?
I think he only did it once.
Yeah, and a world championship on the road. Milan-San Remo.
Yeah.
Arguably his greatest ever win.
Yeah.
In my book, amazing, anyway. Absolutely phenomenal. Although he did beat your teammate at the time, didn't he?
Heinrich Hausler, yes. By a couple of millimetres.
Oh, poor old Heinrich. Yeah, anyway. And then he's also won the leader's jersey in all 3 Grand Tours
as well.
He has won it,
yes, yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, I would swap my entire pro career for any one of the achievements that you have just listed.
Really,
on.
Dan? Really?
You know, just one stage of the welter would be great, wouldn't it?
I mean, that does put his achievements into some sort of context, doesn't it? If you split up his wins and handed them out, they're enough to make the careers of over 100 top-level pro cyclists who have never won anything that
exactly. Right, sticking briefly with racing, a piece of news from last week was that recently crowned UCI mountain bike cross-country world champion Alan Hatherley is going to combine mountain biking next year with road racing with Jayco Alula.
Yeah, this is a cool story, isn't it? Yeah. Particularly given that we were talking just a few weeks ago about one of the world's best triathletes coming over to Jayco Alula.
Oh, yes.
To but he didn't fancy it.
They're
in the
desperate
end, did
to get someone from slightly outside the sport, aren't they?
Well, why not? I mean, it's quite hard to recruit young talent, isn't it? Because everyone else keeps snapping them up. Why not get like
just
old talent?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how he gets on, right? It's fair to say that the transition from mountain bike to road has been done by many riders before him, and there have been some mixed results, haven't they, really? But what I particularly liked about this announcement was the way in which his current team, Cannondale Racing, like handled his exit.
How so?
Well, they were just really kind about it and very cool. To the point, actually, where I'm going to read out some of what they said on Instagram.
Okay.
I've got it here.
Okay.
So it said, Al Boy, I'm guessing that's his nickname.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not someone completely different.
So Al Boy has grown from podium challenger into full-blown UCI world champion and Olympic medalist. He's made no secret of the fact that he's dreamed of one day competing in the Tour de France, and we've made no secret of the fact that we'd release him from his contract to fulfil that dream should the opportunity ever arise. Well, that day has come. Yada, 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 yada. We'll all be cheering him from the roadside, brackets and the sofa, as he embarks on the next challenge of his career at the biggest races in the world. Allen,
I think it was.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
but how cool
that
is that?
About as good a farewell as you could wish for as a sports person in the team, isn't it? Hard to imagine Patrick Lefebvre saying something like that if his star rider ever leaves.
So true. In fact, road teams generally don't celebrate departing riders, do they? In fact, they basically like, you know, pretty much stick a stick in their spokes, don't they? It's like, well, you're not going to race the end of the season with us.
No.
You know. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Moving
on. Like you've got another bee in your bonnet at this point.
Well, I mean, I don't have a bit of a bother about it. I just think it's really cool when someone does the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like,
yeah, it just makes everyone look better.
Yeah. It's like, it's wicked what you've just done for us, and now you're going to go and do something else, even if you're riding a giant next year. anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I might have a bit of a bother about this as well. The cyclist who had a very, very expensive ambulance ride in Oregon,
can
as we mentioned earlier.
Please remind us all what that was about, Si, because it was quite unbelievable.
Well, with pleasure, yeah. So this was the cyclist who was knocked off his bike by an ambulance. The cyclist who was then driven to hospital by that same ambulance, who then presented him with an $1,800 bill for that ride to the hospital.
You almost couldn't make it up.
No, you couldn't.
That bill, incidentally, is part of a much larger one of around $47,000 that William Hoosh has incurred due to the incident. Oh. But he and his lawyers are fighting back.
Yeah, in true US style. So they're going to sue the ambulance provider. Right on, guys, for the princely sum of $1 million,
yes.
Or just under.
Just under, $997,000 to be precise. So that incorporates $47,000 for the medical bills and $50,000 for the expected future medical bills.
And the other $900,000?
The other $900,000 is for pain and suffering.
Oh, that's brutal, isn't it? I mean, I do wish him well, and I hope he, you know, gets back on his bike.
I feel for him.
Yeah, yeah, massively.
Awful, isn't it?
But awful?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Anyway, there we go. Should we move on?
Yes, let's do it.
Big waste of money, that, should we say, by the way. The biggest of all. Right, some good news. Kind of, for the British bike brand Oro. So a few weeks ago, iRide, who was like a UK distributor, who then launched the brand, unfortunately went into administration. But Oro and iRide, actually, I think, have now been snapped up by Barge Capital SSP.
Yeah, that is good to hear. Oh, yeah, they seem to be doing pretty well, didn't they, Oro, as a bike brand?
Yeah, I think it's, like, it's mixed news, though, isn't it, I think? Because everyone, from what I can gather, who was worked at the brand has effectively been made redundant.
Oh.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's not so good.
Well, no, I mean, if that is true, then it's terrible news. But I suppose the potential silver lining for the cloud is for current Oro owners.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully they will get continued customer support and warranty.
Yes.
At this point.
Hopefully so. Some cool news, though, undoubtedly from Denver, where Bike Streets has just come up with an interactive map to show people where they can get to, or specifically what they can get to, within 15 minutes of bike riding.
Yeah, this off the back of the 15-minute city concept, which is basically the idea that people should be able to get to a range of essential services in under 15 minutes of walking, which apparently isn't possible for the most part in Denver, but is by bike, according to AV Stopper, who is the man at the helm of the Bike Streets that Si mentioned before.
Yeah, you know, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, a few weeks back.
Great
actually.
Accent, yeah.
Thanks. And I actually waited 10 minutes at a pedestrian crossing. But it just didn't want me to cross this like 8-lane highway. So it just left me there. So yeah, I can imagine that you don't get very far in 15 minutes of walking in American cities because you basically can't
just
cross the road.
Somewhere.
Yeah. But I did have a very nice bike ride, actually. Once I got across the road, it was mega.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, anyway. This, we think, is good. It's a great way of educating local residents of Denver about where they can get by bike instead of using other forms of transportation, i.e. cars. Mm. And you'd think it could illustrate to a wider group, if it could somehow be shown to them, why 15-minute cities are not a controversial totalitarian plot to restrict the freedom of movement. So apparently 4,000 trips have been recorded, haven't they, on this app
since
it was launched in June.
It is a paid-for app, we should point
out.
Oh,
is it?
A reminder now, though, that you can join one of our presenters for a ride every single Wednesday.
That's right, yeah. So we're holding weekly Zwift group rides at 6:30 GMT, so 18:30. And it'll be led by a GCN presenter, either one of us on the English-speaking channels or one from one of our non-English-speaking channels.
Yep, they are banded rides as well, we should point out, which means that whatever power or pace you're riding at, you will not be dropped. So everyone will be kept together and you can chat to said presenter about anything you want.
Almost anything you
want. Almost anything you want.
That's right. So join the GCN Club on Zwift for more information. Also, there'll be more information. Thank you so much, by the way, last week for submitting all of those grueling, gruesome Zwift workouts. Okay, so stay tuned to the GCN Club on Zwift because we're going to have a couple of group workouts in addition to those, where you get to suffer along with me whilst we make a video about
Sounds
it.
Sounds great.
So Zwift Club and also probably social media as well. It's a good way of getting
Sounds
information
good.
Out, isn't it?
Right, so we move on to tech news from our mates at Elite Wheels now, because they have just launched a brand new product, which they've called the Marvel G36.
Yeah, so a wheel set has been designed specifically for long distance and competitive gravel riding. So 25mm inner rim width. They've reduced the rolling resistance, they say, on the rear hub as well. And a pair of them comes in pretty scant 1,420 grams.
Also a scant $840, I noticed, on their
good,
website as well. You can find more details if you head over to Elite Wheels website. Right, let's finish Cycling Shorts this week with a giveaway. This is your chance to win a core sensor.
That's right. You will have seen Ollie Bridgewood using it if you watched his video on heat training from a couple of weeks ago. All the details on how to enter and whether or not you're eligible, because I think
There's a couple of countries.
There's a handful of countries, yeah, where we can't send them to. Anyway, that can be found by clicking on the link that you will find in the description below.
Entries for that competition will close this coming Friday, the 15th of November, at 10 o'clock GMT in the morning, and we'll announce the winners on this show this time next week. Good luck.
Good luck.
Next up, hack / bodge of the week. First up this week, this one from Still Draco spotted this beer can holder on the handlebars of a Mamakari shopping bike in Japan. While I don't condone drinking alcohol while riding, it struck me that this might have tickled Dan's fancy before his conversion to a healthy lifestyle.
What are you going to pronounce now, bodge?
I'm going to say hack, because it doesn't necessarily need to be a can with any alcohol in it, does it? It could be
good
any
point.
Drink.
And you've got to be very careful in Japan now after that news story
we
had a couple of weeks ago, where you can get up to 6 months in prison for misdemeanors while cycling, including being drunk. Which, there you go.
So, I mean, it might still not be a hack, because it's probably just an aftermarket product that someone bought and put on their handlebars.
Yeah. Ah, yeah, kind of cool though, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, well, let's just, you know.
Hack.
We still make up the rules as we go along. Later, so I'll go hack as well.
Yeah, there we go. All right, next up, we've got this one.
We infuriate some people that we still make it up as we go along.
I know. One day we'll have to write them down, probably.
Well, we did once.
Did we?
We still don't keep to that.
I can't remember. Right, Alex sent this one in. Alex, we don't know who. Not my hack, they said, but spotted this genius solution on Reddit by a cyclist. Apparently, if you point your bike light to the side of your bike about 1 or 2 metres to your right or left, car drivers actively avoid the illuminated spot.
Yeah.
A few other people say it works in the comments too. Incredible. Well, that's pretty nuts, isn't it? Which side do you think you've got to do? Into traffic, presumably.
Yeah. I mean, there's no point in doing it on the
pavement.
On the hedge side. So the cars avoid the hedge. Better avoid that brightly lit tree.
Well, I mean, that is quite good. Yeah, all right, that was a bit of a low moment. But no, that is cool, actually. I think I'd probably want a second light rather than my main headlight pointing the right
way. Yeah, I presume that is, you know, you don't just not see where you're going in order for the cars not to...
Yeah, no, that's quite cool. You know, the other week, my bike light, for some reason, wasn't attached properly to my handlebars, and it ended up spinning round, and I hadn't noticed because I was concentrating on doing what I was doing, and realised that I was entirely illuminated by my headlight, and I thought that might be quite good as well, just like a glowing cyclist.
You think that if they can see your face, they don't want to hit you? I wouldn't do that if I was you.
No, I mean, the issue was from behind as well. I suspect I cast quite a large shadow, particularly my ankles. So, anyway, I, as soon as I noticed, I put it round to the front again. But I think that's a hack.
Well, presuming that the Reddit comments are correct, I'll definitely go hack with that as well. I think we should try that.
What a wicked idea.
Sarah, in say hi there. Times of tedious frame protection tape. That wasn't very good intonation.
Yeah, was it?
Hi there. Times of tedious frame protection tape application, still rubbish.
Yeah, do you want a third go?
Okay, hi there. Times of tedious frame protection tape application and the even more tedious scraping off are over.
Oh, that was nicely done, mate. Well done.
It still wasn't perfect. I recently discovered the best hack to protect my frame from chafing when using bike packing bags. Instead of using sticky duct tape, I'm all over the place.
You are, yeah.
Here. Instead of using sticky duct tape or other expensive stuff, I use bondage tape. Yes, the kinky one. Right, I need to make sure I get this bit right. It's cheap.
Is it?
It is cheap,
yeah. Is it? I didn't know that.
No idea. It's cheap, sturdy, and can be removed very easily by just peeling it off. And as it comes with no adhesive, it leaves no trace. Give it a go.
Well, I'm intrigued.
As soon as I get home.
I'm intrigued.
After I've ordered it.
I'm wondering, like, firstly, you know, the fact that it's sturdy... I would have thought there was some kind of like fail-safe built into it. But also, if it's not adhesive, how's it stuck?
I don't know. The mind boggles with the description, doesn't it?
I guess it could be knots. You know, maybe that's probably a thing.
I mean, it
looks quite sticky, doesn't it? It's very shiny. Wipe clean, you imagine?
Yeah. I need to look up what you actually do with bondage tape normally.
I know you can do that on your work laptop, mate.
Surely, when it's for work purposes.
I mean, I don't know. You go for it, and I'll, yeah. Okay. You just tell me about it next week. Oh, we'll be all interested, wouldn't we? Yeah. Dan's research for next week's GCN show.
Done on his phone.
Yeah, well, I think, Sarah, I'm going to have to say that's a hack.
I'll say it's a hack as well?
Yeah, all right, definitely. Well, there we go. Who knew, hey? Who knew? Right, lastly then, we got this from Tandem Trev. Are Jubilee clips better or worse than zip ties? It's quite a philosophical question, that, isn't it? The rods on the back rack came apart. I did a temporary repair with a plumbing Jubilee clip. More than a decade later, the rack is still going strong. That is impressive. Is a Jubilee clip better or worse than a zip tie?
In sturdiness, I think there's only one answer. All of that picture looks strong somehow. It just doesn't look like it's going to break anytime soon, does it?
No. I mean, I think it depends where, probably, doesn't it? Like, I wouldn't want a Jubilee clip, like, attaching a brake hose temporarily to my frame. Not that I want a zip tie doing that job either, but if it's going to be a permanent solution this.
If you want a brake hose attached to a top-end frame, could I suggest bondage tape?
Now that is a hack. Yeah, because actually that looked quite aero, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
You could probably have like a really nicely integrated cockpit, couldn't you?
Do you think I can buy some on expenses?
Well, I mean, I think with your search history, it's probably you'll need that in order to justify it.
I'm going to go, based on the type of bike this has been used for, I'm going to go hack for this.
Okay. If Dan's not here next week, by the way, you all know why. Yeah, Sarah, it's your fault.
Oh, I found a new career.
Watch, there's a new YouTube channel springs up. Actually, I don't think you'd be able to do it on YouTube, would you?
I doubt it.
Censored that one.
Anyway, if you'd like to get involved in this part of the show, a reminder, all you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
The floodgates have opened now, haven't they? My word. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do, as always, is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in a sec after, as always, the results from last week, where this was the photo.
Yes, was indeed the photo from the Saitama Criterium. Not from the actual bike race, but from the activities pre-bike race. I can't remember. It wasn't karate or judo, was it? It was something that I'd never heard of before. It's a martial art, let's put it that way.
It was Aikido?
Yes, Aikido you not.
There you go, well, that was the joke. I was trying to think what your joke was.
Well, there's an honourable mention actually this week from Burgles, who wrote in to say, Cav always loves to say hiya to his fans whenever possible.
Love
hiya.
It. Love it.
Sterling 1989, though, is the winner this week with caption competition. What a shock, Roglic on the floor again.
We did chuckle at that, didn't we? And you've got to say, you can't ever let details get in the way of a good caption, because that's not Roglic.
It's not Roglic
on the floor. Roglic, I think, is sat down elsewhere, isn't he? Looking very...
Well, to be fair, Roglic is sat down on the floor.
He is on the... Yeah, okay, but he's not been floored by Cav's Aikido skills. Sterling, get in touch and we'll get you your GCN camera... Still the champagne sloshing around. We'll get your Camelback water bottle out to you. This week's photo, Dan?
This week's photo is also from the Saitama Criterium in Japan. Nice. As mentioned last week, this is the gift that keeps on giving until roughly Christmas time, 2028.
Yeah.
It is a picture, for those of you listening in podcast format, of Romain Bardet, Binyam Girmay and Mark Cavendish with kind of elaborate top hats on in the colours of their respective teams.
Go on then, Dan. What are you going to go with?
I will get you started by saying, Mark, what was it that made you decide it was about time to retire from cycling? Yeah. I mean, they must be there thinking, what has it all come to?
Yeah. I mean, Binyam doesn't look super happy, does he? But Romain Bardet, that looks like a genuine, smile on his face.
I'm sure it is fun in the moment, but when these pictures come out afterwards...
Ah, there we go. Well, all good sports, aren't they, really? But yeah, get involved in the comment section down below and see if you can beat Dan's caption for next week.
Shortly, we'll let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. But first up, a few comments from last week's video, starting with these underneath the show, which was about pro cycling's arms race.
Yes, indeed. In fact, our first comment relates to that. Mike, RM1 Pound, said... more like a legs race.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah. Good joke. It was kind of the point at which it's not just a legs race anymore, is it?
No.
In fact, Alex Dowsett, former pro cyclist, has just been signed up to Astana, hasn't he?
He has.
As a brain now.
He has indeed.
So there you go.
Yeah. For the performance and aerodynamics, etc., which he was always very good at.
Yeah.
Mfergie1817 wrote in to say, from a Torontonian cyclist, I doubt you would get an intelligent debate with Doug Ford.
There was a lot of comments about Doug Ford, and I think, like we said last week, doesn't sound like the kind of person you'd want to sit down for a beer with, but no. Maybe we should. Maybe that is, you know, that's how we've got to tackle these people.
Could be, couldn't it?
But yeah, I feel for you guys over there. I do, because that would be, I could, like, deeply frustrating and quite upsetting to actually feel like you're about to slip backwards when it comes to that kind of stuff.
That would be awful.
Yeah, gutting.
LTRTG13 put, when Dan said, what should we come back as? Coaches. It made me think coach drivers more like.
Well, you could drive a team bus, couldn't you?
Could, yeah.
A lot of the team bus drivers seem really happy.
And a lot of them are ex-cyclists.
Oh, they as well.
Well, I don't know. I can think of one.
One of them is ex-cyclist. Well, there you go, mate. Yeah, but anyway, that's cool. Underneath the 30 mile an hour challenge, can Alex and I ride 10 miles in under 20 minutes? MNBY55555CXZ said, I enjoyed the complaints about the hill, and when you showed the profile, the entire route was downhill before and after that. Now, I don't think we should have showed the profile in that video, but it wasn't as downhill as it looked.
No, it was all very the time. Exaggerated profile.
Yeah, and this is what we were saying, right? As soon as you got an uphill in it, it kills you.
Yeah.
But I stand by the fact that if it wasn't for those blooming roundabouts at the end and Ollie measuring it wrong, we'd have nailed it.
Mm.
It cut 0.28 kilometres per hour off our speed, and that was what made the difference.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Jay Mees put, Ollie didn't factor in the route shrinking on colder temperatures. That was another excuse there. Meanwhile, under inside the factory that makes $25,000 bikes, BX Cycling Chef put, this episode definitely enlightened me. I had no idea Parley bikes existed and manufactured here in the US. Thank you, Ollie, for bringing this to light.
That's cool, isn't it? And then Gary Hanks said, I bought my Parley years ago. Everything Ollie said is absolutely true. For a bike of its time, it's incredibly smooth. Alas, it's now confined to my trainer because I'm 78 and live at the top of a hill. Therefore, I now have an e-bike. That's cool, though, isn't it? Imagine having that bike, like a piece of history that you get to ride on the turbo trainer.
I had a friend that I lived just a few doors down from for a few years who absolutely loved Parley bikes.
Really?
Couldn't get enough of them.
Yeah.
Right, what's coming up this week? Well, on Wednesday, we are going to give you an introduction to Ruvi.
Yeah, how to use Ruvi, basically. Thursday, this is my Atlanta trip. I went to see the folks at Wahoo, and it was very cool, actually. So, yeah, there's a lot to show you and tell you about from that.
And that's on Thursday.
Yeah.
On Saturday, I'm going to tell you about what happened when I quit alcohol for a month. It was actually longer than that in the end. It's 5 weeks and 6 days.
Was it?
I lasted for.
Oh, that's cool, man.
And since that, I've only had one night on the drink. I just got enough alcohol to make up for the 5 weeks.
So if you follow Dan on Instagram, you might have seen some stories from Friday night.
I did a number of stories over the course of the evening before I passed out. But I did do the park run the next morning.
There you go,
to get something done. But yeah, some interesting stats actually in terms of blood pressure, heart rate variability, resting heart rate, etc., which I've of course tracked with a spreadsheet over the month with some other parameters as well. So I'll inform you all, and I'll be speaking to a doctor as well who will let us know what effect it had in just a short period of time, really.
Could you tell us how much money you saved as well, Dan?
I didn't include that in the spreadsheet, actually.
I'm surprised about that.
No, I was talking about wasting money. I guess I could have written down that.
There you go, mate. Yeah. right, and then on Sunday, so you might remember, I think it was earlier this year, Hank did a bike race on a recumbent. And anyway, this time he's tackling an epic ride on his recumbent. So what on earth is going to happen to Hank when we unleash him onto the open roads? So
We've seen some footage of this, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
Worth watching.
Should we sneak a little clip in?
Go on.
Oh, it's like extreme corner, that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, then that brings us to the end of another show slash podcast.
Yeah, we did promise people actually that we'd have more extreme corners.
I know, I thought of that when you just said it.
And we were like, oh, we've sort of not put them in since then.
Unlike us to deliver on not to deliver on promises, isn't it?
Weird that, isn't it? Yeah, there we go. All right, next week we might have our table back, might we?
Hopefully.
Yeah, which would be nice. But in the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed this sleek little black number.
A change is as good as a rest or something. I don't know.
I'm not sure we often talk about tables in that context, but we should probably leave things now, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.